Good morning and welcome to The Extra Reel, our weekly film criticism show here on UCC Campus Radio with myself, Colin Ryan.
And myself, Joe Brown.
And this week we are delighted to be joined by Sean O'Connor, director of Streaming and Dreaming, the Grandmaster Cash Story. How are you today, Sean?
How are you doing? You well?
I'm very well, yeah.
Good.
Did you like that? A very, very fast intro.
It was a very fast intro. Very professional.
It's been a while. I haven't done it in a long time, to be honest. Chairs on the last two.
I've been hogging it.
He's been hogging it. So
you will know it. It was excellent.
So, Sean, is there anything you want to tell us about yourself? Or,
I suppose I've just been I've been a filmmaker for the last, I guess, a serious filmmaker really for the last like maybe two and a half years. I've been interested in film since pretty much since I saw Jurassic Park when I was 11 years old. I was like, yeah, that's for me. So I haven't kind of progressed to that level yet, but I've been kind of working in music for the last maybe kind of 8 to 10 years, and in about 2 years ago, just like, yeah, just buy a camera and go out and shoot something, see how it goes, which I did, and it kind of turned into Grandmaster Cash, and which kind of got a life of its own after a while, and yeah, since then I've just been doing little bits and pieces and trying to get other stuff off the ground, so there it is.
Very good, that's great. Yeah, so this week, of course, we're going to be talking to Sean O'Connor a bit about kind of some of the other work you've done as well. We're probably going to start with some of the other work you've done before we talk about Grandmaster Cash. And then I think we're going to just talk about mockumentaries, of course. Grandmaster Cash kind of is kind of touched on that genre, of course. Anything else to add, Ger?
Yeah, well, I suppose we'll be talking about the Grandmaster Cash, but also we'll be talking about, as you said, other mockumentaries. So we'll be talking about things like Bob Roberts, Spinal Tap, Zelig, Confederate States of America. I don't know, is there anything else you want to add to that, Colin?
Well, I'm definitely going to talk about I'm Still Here anyway. I think touching on hip-hop music in some way.
Right.
So it'll be kind of similar enough. It might be a nice segue into Grandmaster Cash or from Grandmaster Cash.
What happens if I haven't seen these films that you're talking about?
Ooh.
Do I need to get out of the studio?
Well, I think we'll talk for about 20 minutes and leave them sit in silence.
Well, if you sit in silence, yeah. I think that's what we'll do.
Yeah.
No, we'll be fine. I mean, it often happens half the time that Jer might have seen some films and I haven't seen them, and vice versa, you know? So we'll just mention a few. But I think we'll talk more about just the genre itself and how interesting it can be.
Okay. I'll bluff it if I don't know what you're talking about, okay?
Do indeed.
We love bluffers because they're the best speakers, actually.
Really? Okay. So okay, that's
there we go.
All right, so I'm going to start with a bit of music from Florence and the Machine.
Florence and the Machine are great as well, though, but we go with Florence.
Yeah. Lawrence and the Machine are their new tribute act, I think.
Yeah.
A guy in drag. Anyway. All right. So, yeah, a bit of a Kiss with a Fist from Jennifer's Body.
And we're back. You're listening to The Extra Reel on 086-783-9800. You're listening to our mockumentary special. Joining us in the studio today, we've got Sean O'Connor, local filmmaker. So, I suppose, before we go any further, we've kind of touched on it a bit earlier, Sean, but more about your influences. I mean, just from looking at some of your shorts and some of your other features, there seems to be kind of an influence from like as far ranging as guys like Ken Wardrop, Terrence Malick and Peter Greenaway, and even kind of a late Clint Eastwood at his very best, kind of a vibe off some of your stuff.
Wow.
Would that be true, or are there other things that you personally would have been more influenced by?
Well, I'm very flattered to hear you say that. I'm actually thrilled, like. To be honest, not really, no. I mean, I wouldn't consider them direct influences at all. Like I said, like I was raised on Spielberg, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, Spielberg from like all through the 80s and 90s, I mean, my God in heaven, like the man was just incredible. Kubrick as well. God. Oh, James Cameron.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, I watched Avatar again the other day and I didn't like it that much in the cinema. I just kind of thought, for God's sake, like, I mean, it's so long. And
it's like a subpar Aliens in the cinema. Well, that's because, you see, the thing is, it's like what you're saying, all these best films come from the 80s and stuff. Mm. And then Avatar, you're kind of judging Avatar, you're expecting Aliens 2 or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And it kind of doesn't reach those heady heights. But how did you feel on the second watch?
I actually enjoyed it a lot more.
Yeah.
I think because the first time I saw it, I was like, right, first James Cameron film in 10 years, strap yourself in, like, in 3D, no less. And then I was like, okay, and it finished, and I thought the ending was spectacular, but just leading up to it, it was a bit too kind of family-friendly or something, you know, there was no bite to it. And also, for some reason, the colours kind of bothered me after a while, you know. But then the second time I watched this, I just watched it on the TV at my friend's house, and I was like, God, this is actually really, really enjoyable, you know, and it's like very well structured, and it's, you know, And then again, who the hell am I to be criticizing James Cameron? Like, you know. But that said, aside from all that, like, I think that, like, Desert Island films, like, one of them, Aliens, I think Aliens is absolutely a masterpiece. Like,
yeah.
Start to finish, every scene makes absolute sense. Same with Terminator 2. Every scene makes absolute sense. And, I mean, there's a documentary on the DVD of Aliens as well about the making of it. And it's, like, an hour and a half long or something. And, like, what Cameron went through making that film in Pinewood Studios, because none of the English crew knew him or liked him. And he was working them from, like, 7 in the morning to, like, you know, midnight. And they were used to, like, you know, tea at 9, tea at 10, tea at 11. And Cameron was just, like, cracking the whip every day. Like, and Gail Ann Hurd, who was his, I think it was his wife at the time. And they didn't have time to test screen the film right. And James Horner was writing the music up until like 2 days before the film was like released, you know. And then they showed it, and everyone's like, "Oh my god, here we go!" And then people came out of it going, "Like, this is the best thing I've ever seen." Like, you know, the fact that he pulled it out of the bag and the special effects still stand up today is just testament to, like, I mean, that man is just—he's kind of a god or something. How did he do that? Like, you know.
I think the only problem with James Cameron is he kind of knows it as well.
Yeah, he is the king of the world, like, you know.
Yeah. Well, so, with that much money, he definitely could be the king of the world.
He could.
But I mean, you started in your background was in multimedia, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I did a degree in multimedia in CIT. 4 years of just absolutely great fun. I just loved it, like, you know. And in third year, we had to do this. We had to basically make a documentary as our kind of year-long project. So I chose to do a documentary about the folklore of Kerry. It's actually on my website.
It's what called, is that website?
Thank you for asking.
Time for a plug.
It's www.seanoconnor.com. SHAUNOConnor.com. Yeah, I got in on the ground floor there. I also, my email address is seanoconnor@gmail.com. I don't know how I swung that, like, but yeah, basically there was a guy in Amsterdam who had SeanOConnor.com, and he let it go for one day, and swooped in and I got it. He's nice. Never getting it back.
We've slapped an old link up for that actually on the Facebook, so if anybody wants to check it out, go to our Facebook page and you'll be able to go straight to SeanOConnor.com.
Cool. So yeah, as part of the, so I made this documentary. It was like 15 minutes long, but it was about the folklore of Kerry. Excuse me. And how it kind of pertains to modern myths like UFOs and stuff. I mean, again, you know, raised on the X-Files and stuff, like, so. But I kind of took a kind of quasi-scientific... Oh, I faked a lot of it as well. I kind of got people to do fake interviews mixed with, like, real interviews, because I was big into the Blair Witch Project as well at the time. And that was the first thing I ever kind of did that I actually shot and edited stuff. And I think that prior to that, in my head, it was like this, like, some sort of magical process that, like, you know... Oh, it's lovely to talk about it and kind of, you know, go to the film stuff, but to actually do it is, yeah, you can't actually do it, like. And then shooting it and putting it together, and we did some, I did some very rudimentary, like, 3D special effects and basic titles and stuff. It was on Final Cut and shot on DV, mini DV, yeah. And then putting it together, and it was kind of like, and I finished up, and it turned out I recorded my own soundtrack for it, like, and did my own narration, and when I rendered out the final thing, I was kind of like, and I got a really good reaction just from the lectures and stuff and people who saw it. And I was just like, this is not impossible, you know. This is not even a terribly difficult thing to do if you're enjoying it, like, you know. Being aware of what you're shooting and editing, of course, you become more aware of that over time, but there's so much you can get away with, you know. And aside from that, I think what struck me about the whole thing was that it was just, like, it was incredibly fun, like, you know. I mean, it was just, like, you know, from the filming through the editing through the special effects, the whole thing, I was just, like, I hate to say this, kind of just, like, laugh my head off most of the time. Like, I was like, God, look at what I did there, you know. You know, and not, like, you know, God, pat myself in the back, but, like, I couldn't believe that, like, these two shots that I had done on separate days looked so good when I cut them together, you know, as if they'd kind of just magicked out of somewhere, you know, so... So I was like, yeah, if I can someday get paid to do that, rock and roll.
Brilliant.
I think that's not much of a story. There's no punchline.
But I mean, it is true. I mean, when you do get two shots and you put them together, and somehow you see just even a simple edit that you kind of you take for this, you wouldn't regard it at all in a normal film. But when you're doing your own thing, it does kind of take on a, kind of a. an extra kind of level of excellence. Even you're kind of going, oh my god, I actually did that, and I totally understand what you're on about.
Of course you did the MA here as well, and of course that is like me and Jared both done, and that's primarily a theory based course, I suppose.
Yes.
So for film snobs like us.
Yes, indeed. But did you find because of the work that goes into that that interfere, or were you just able to keep doing your own stuff on the side?
To be honest, I think after college I was I was a kind of full-time musician then, and after the degree, and I was doing I did the music for about 2 years, I'd say, and then I was like, okay, I need to get back into the film thing, and I, for some reason, I was just like, do film studies, you know, and the theory thing was really interesting, you know, but I kind of at the end of it, I was kind of like, it in some way kind of gave me like a kick up the ass to go out and just like go and shoot something as well, you know. Because I didn't want to kind of focus on the film theory 100%, you know. I thought it was a lovely thing to do for a year, you know, and the thesis was just like, you know, it was really good, and I met loads of people and loads of friends and stuff, like one of which actually kind of went on to be in Grandmaster Cash. His girlfriend was doing she did the MA with me, but I think for me anyway, it was a lovely thing to pursue for a year. But after that, I was like, right, get rid of the books, you know, get rid of all the theory, get all right, and just go out and like get a camera and go back to kind of like what you did in third year in college, which is just go out and shoot and hope for the best. Hopefully something will work. And if it doesn't work, try and fix it in editing. So, yeah, but I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed the year. Like, and it was really wonderful. And, you know. And Gwent is awesome, like, you know. And, love you, Gwent. And Laura as well.
She's probably listening.
Is she listening?
She could be.
Hi, Gwenda.
No, but I definitely understand where you're coming from. I mean, even we found that as well. I mean, I had a tiny bit of practical background in my undergraduate degree.
Yeah.
And when you do theory, it does kind of distance you from the film in some way, because obviously you're not making it, but you're just taking so much of the elements out of it, like almost in a kind of a semiotic way, I suppose.
Yeah.
You're looking at, oh, this is a metaphor for this and this and all that kind of, but you're not going, what lighting did he use here? How did he shoot that? You're not asking those questions.
Yeah, yeah.
You're I don't know. You're going in more in depth in some ways, but you're losing other things, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I kind of wonder sometimes how much, like, when in reviews and stuff as well, that, like, how much of like, the criticism and the theory is completely in the critic and theorist's head, you know, and has nothing to do with the filmmaker, you know, because like you see kind of like, even in practical terms, like you see with reviews of like Kevin Smith films, like, you know, where they say, oh, it's just horribly shot, like, and the lighting is horrendous, like, but, you know, it was never Kevin Smith's goal to make like a beautiful looking film, you know, and he knows that, like, he makes it for a specific a group of people, like, who will go to see his films, and I'm one of them, like, I'll go see any Kevin Smith film, like, it's great, you know.
Definitely.
But it seems almost redundant to criticise those kind of films in those terms, like, you know, and in another sense, it's redundant for me to kind of criticise Avatar for being, you know, it's not as good as Aliens. Because so what if it's not as good as Aliens? It's a different film, you know? It's a different shark, like, you know? It's 10 years... It's 10 years later.
They got a bigger boat.
They got a bigger boat, like, you know? They got a spaceship, you know? It's 10 years later, and James Cameron's a different part of his life, like, so... It makes as much sense for him to make Avatar now as it does for him to make Aliens back in the day, like, or, you know, True Lies or whatever. So, you know, for what he did with Avatar, he absolutely knocked it out of the park. Like, so for me to say, like, oh, well, it's not as good as this, and structurally there's problems with it, like, or whatever, like, it's just, you know, it's kind of like, my criticisms are like dust in the wind or something, you know. It's like, what does it matter, you know? It doesn't matter to James Cameron, it doesn't matter to all the people who enjoyed it. Like, I'm not going to change anybody's mind by telling them that, like, Avatar is not as good as Aliens. They aren't going to go, all right, well, you're actually correct, Sean. I didn't enjoy Avatar as much as I should have, like, you know. Or I enjoyed it too much. In retrospect, they're going to go, yeah, shut up, I'm going to go watch it again, like, you know. I don't know why I started talking about that, like, but...
That was really interesting. The filmmaker's perspective. So I think it's time for another lash of music, and then we'll be cutting into your shorts again. So I suppose it's time for some Radiohead from the soundtrack from Vanilla Sky. It's Everything is in its right place.
That's correct.
Excellent.